continuing on to our next speaker that is going to talk about how they have addressed this challenge and achieved success is Jennifer Grimmert. She is the Deputy Director of Energy Outreach Colorado, where she is responsible for all program management and advocacy activities for the organization. She also serves on the advisory board for the National Energy and Utility Affordability Coalition and on the Governor's Commission on Low-Income Energy Assistance in Colorado. Previously, she worked for numerous nonprofits and holds a master's of nonprofit management. So she's in the right position working for a nonprofit organization. We look forward to your talk. Jennifer, go ahead, please.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. And I want to thank Mark for his presentation because he gave a good overview of our program and his association does a great job. What I'm going to talk about today is specifically Colorado's experience with trying to integrate these programs, both short-term cash assistance programs and longer-term energy efficiency programs, and the advocacy work that we've done to get there, and really how other states can work toward this model, which we are really proud of and we think provides a one-stop shop for clients and is very client-focused. So Energy Outreach Colorado is a nonprofit organization, and our mission is to ensure that all Colorado households have access to home energy. We're celebrating our 25th anniversary this year, and we've distributed more than $250 million. We administer programs across the gamut, including utility bill payment assistance, efficiency programs, behavior change programs, as well as advocacy work. We have strong utility partnerships. We serve on multiple governor-appointed committees. We work closely with our LIHEAP department as well as our Colorado Energy Office, which administers the weatherization program. We intervene actively at the Public Utility Commission, and we're very active in the National Energy and Utility Affordability Coalition, which is a group that works on these issues nationally, includes utility companies, nonprofit organizations, government entities, as well as large associations including EEI and AGA. I'm just getting a note to make it full screen, but I'll just keep going.
Jennifer, if you select the little icon at the bottom next to the 94% at the bottom of the screen.
Okay. Oh, I see.
That one, yep.
Okay, is that doing it?
Huh.
I'm sorry.
No worries. I think folks should be able to see it okay.
Well, it is on my screen. I don't know why it is on coming up. It worked in practice, I promise.
No worries.
So our history is that we were created by an executive order from our governor when we saw that LIHEAP funding was decreasing, and there were existing utility programs in Colorado, and all of the assets of those utility assistance programs were transferred to our new organization. And traditionally, our funding came from utility bill inserts. We worked on legislation to have all unclaimed utility deposits and refunds sent to the new organization or as sheets. We initiated direct mail programs. We have worked on the regulatory side around fines and utility settlements. For example, we had a decommissioning of a nuclear power plant in Colorado that initiated some settlement funding, and that's been a great way for us to seed fund this program. Initially, our funding supplemented our state LIHEAP program. In Colorado, this is a heating program. It's administered November through April and is county-administered versus what Mark described as community action agencies administering LIHEAP funds. What we were seeing is that there was a need for year-round assistance for all energy needs, including electricity. Where LIHEAP was primarily used for natural gas, there were a lot of families that were fully employed in the winter and not as much in the summer because of our resort communities. And so that need for year-round assistance as well as for all fuels was important. So we developed a year-round program for all fuel types working with community-based agencies somewhat like CAP. So these are groups like Catholic Charities, Salvation Army, lots of different organizations, rural, metro-based, that administer the program for us. So they see clients, they get all of their information. We ask them to apply for LIHEAP first when that program's open, but for households that are over the income for LIHEAP, that don't meet eligibility criteria or that need additional assistance beyond what LIHEAP can provide, we were able to do that with the private funding that we were generating. When clients is not eligible, like I said, we can provide that that assistance seamlessly. It's all tracked in a centralized database, and vendor payments are made to utilities. We partner with school districts, United Way, and counties to expand that. And then we also initiated a percent of income program, as Mark mentioned, which we also consider the gold standard, which allows us to serve the lowest income households. And all of our investor-owned utilities in Colorado participate in that program. When it comes to energy efficiency, we've always worked closely with our state weatherization program, but we were seeing when natural gas prices were incredibly high in the mid-2000s that the agencies that were administering our cash assistance funds were having a hard enough time paying their own bills. So we created a nonprofit energy efficiency program, which essentially we act as general contractors to facilitate different funding sources to help nonprofits that serve low-income households. So those are places like transitional housing, food banks, administrative offices. And as we developed that program, we were able to participate in kind of expanding other efficiency programs in our state. We worked closely with our Affordable Housing Association to ensure that more multifamily affordable housing was being served with weatherization, and we actually secured the contract with our state energy office to deliver those funds. And Colorado had mandated demand-side management programs through the legislature, and we advocated to ensure that low-income households were part of that, that they had special considerations as the rules and programs were developed. And along with our state weatherization program, Energy Outreach Colorado administers all of the energy efficiency programs targeted to low-income households in Colorado. So we're able to leverage federal dollars, utility dollars, as well as our own private funding. Additionally, we secured the Crisis Intervention Program, which is part of the LIHEAP program that ensures that folks have access if you receive LIHEAP benefits to heat. So if your heating system goes out, then we can have a team that goes in and does a furnace repair or replacement program, which also kind of identifies additional opportunities in the household to serve. Just a quick outline of our program matrix. When it comes to our bill payment assistance programs, we have some unique funding sources. There's a checkoff box on all investor-owned utility bills where customers can donate monthly. We generate about $2 million a year through that. We receive late payment fees from Xcel Energy, which is our largest multi-state utility, and we secured those to go back to those customers for bill payment assistance. We worked on state legislation to get severance tax dollars, which, because we're a big oil and gas producing state, we made the case that as the prices of those commodities go up, it negatively affects the customers that we serve, and have been able to receive those funds both for directly our program, Energy Outreach, as well as for LIHEAP and for weatherization. So those are important private funds or state funds that can leverage the federal programs. On the efficiency side, as I said, we manage all of the low-income demand-side management contracts with the investor-owned utilities in partnership with our state weatherization program. We've been reaching out to rural electric associations and municipal utilities and have had a lot of recent success. Again, because we have a state that has 65 utilities, we always want to make sure that we have both the gas and electric rebates and funding available so that we can have a holistic approach on how these households are being served. We're doing a lot of work in multifamily buildings. Since 2007, we've upgraded 35,000 multifamily units. which has been really exciting. We've also upgraded 275 nonprofit organizations. As I mentioned, we administer the Crisis Intervention Program. Through the City and County of Denver, we actually negotiated through the franchise agreement funding specifically for low-income households. And again, as I said, we have a lot of oil and gas producers and individual and corporate donors that have really liked the fact that we're able to leverage their funding both with private and public partnerships. We've expanded our behavior change and efficiency education program. Part of what we see is that families really need to understand how they use energy, and it's not enough just replacing equipment. We really need to educate facility managers and ensure that those savings are secured for long periods of time. We're working with our Colorado Housing and Finance Authority to look at tax credit properties and ensure that we can include energy efficiency programs as those are being renegotiated. We work a lot with affordable housing developers. We have a pilot program with O-Power and Xcel Energy targeting low-income households, which is essentially encouraging households to look at their behavior and their use as they compare energy to their neighbors. And then we do a lot of advocacy work, which I'll talk about. This is really the key to the success that we've had, is really targeted action to be the voice for the low-income energy consumer. We actively intervene in rate cases, acquisitions, rulemakings. As I said, we initiated the percent of income payment program in Colorado. And these have been really important to educate our public utility commissioners about the needs of low-income households in Colorado, how we have an authentic partnership with our public partners, and that we really are looking at what's the best outcome for the clients that we represent, and make it as seamless and effective and efficient, because these are all public funds. We recognize that. The legislative activities we've had, again, have been successful in terms of securing unclaimed utility deposits and refunds that would normally have just gone into our general Colorado payback. We worked on the Energy Assistance Act, which required investor-owned utilities to have a voluntary checkoff program. You know, again, as I mentioned, we really work to ensure that there's low-income carve-outs or specific programs targeted to low-income households in demand-side management programs. And the severance tax funding that we've been able to secure over the years has been critical in leveraging all of these private funds and public funds. So the key successes that we've had is really being, you know, active in advocacy, understanding how to leverage the funds, what are the needs of the different funding sources. Utilities are required to generate energy savings, so we deliver decatherms and kilowatts to them. When we do energy efficiency programs, the state and the DOE weatherization is really interested in quality production, and the cities that we work with have carbon goals that they're trying to achieve. And so, again, the work that we do on the efficiency side and the behavior change side is able to apply to those goals. We have a subcontractor model where we work with lots of different subcontractors across the state. These are, you know, private organizations, nonprofits, the weatherization agencies, to ensure that we're able to, you know, ramp up and ramp down as funding is available. During the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act, so there was a large push for these programs, and we've been able to maintain the momentum because we've been able to track and, you know, and provide good results to the work that we've done. There's a really good return on investment in this work. We do a lot of measurement and verification and continuous process improvement. But I think the biggest thing that we think about in how we design our programs and how we try to partner with our state entities is really what does the client need? The building owners on the multifamily side as well as their residents, and how do we advocate on their behalf? Again, a lot of times we're the only voice that's thinking about this population, not because people don't care about it, just because it's there's not a lot of voices out there that kind of represent these needs. And these forums, I will admit, on the advocacy side are challenging. They take a lot of work and understanding on how you navigate through a public utility commission process, but we've found that our staff at the state is very helpful in helping people intervene and navigate that, as well as at the legislature. So in terms of what other states can do, again, we really want to make sure that people understand that there needs to be special consideration for adding low-income programs to any, whether it's legislation or regulation. These are difficult projects to work on. They don't have the same market rate sophistication or capacity to manage these projects. What we found as a nonprofit kind of third party doing this is that we're able to go beyond what the federal guidelines present as we, you know, are able to leverage multiple funding sources together. And the more success we have, the more funding we're able to attract. Working both at the Capitol and the legislature and at the commission is important. Having strong, authentic partnerships where you understand, you know, what those needs are and can compromise. We are very fortunate to have the utilities that we do in Colorado that have worked with us from the beginning, both on the cash assistance side and are evolving on the efficiency side. We really have worked hard to make sure that no community is left out. We have a broad demographics in Colorado. Our eastern plains are very agricultural and rural. We have mountain communities that have really high average median incomes, but a lot of the low-income workers have to drive, you know, many miles to get there. You know, we have, you know, urban communities that kind of cover the middle of our state, and so we really have to consider all of those, as well as communities of color, disabled individuals and what their specific needs are, how seniors need to be served. Colorado has a really high percent of aging population, higher than the national average, and so that's causing some special consideration. We really want to focus on improving the existing infrastructure that we've built, ensuring maximum protections, and then really, I think, as Mark mentioned, the health and safety benefits in addition to the energy savings that we're seeing through our programs are really, I think, just at the beginning. We're starting to see all of the benefits that this has for families and for communities. And that's my presentation.
Great. Thanks, Jennifer. You guys are doing great work, and I think the takeaway that I have is that you're thinking about the problem holistically, looking at all pieces of the pie, and being active, not necessarily just reactive, as far as trying to improve state policies. And you said you're also taking the time to establish relationships and partnerships, which is, it does take time. It takes time and effort, but obviously it has paid off for you guys. So thanks for telling us all about your program. Before we go on to the next speakers, we wanted to do one more poll question for you, and Wendy's going to do that one for us.
Okay, so the next poll question is, which type of low-income energy users would you be most interested in learning how to reach? And this is another where we're asking you to select just one from this list. I know it might be a tough choice, but are you most interested in learning how to reach multifamily affordable housing tenants, single-family homeowners, single-family home renters, nonprofit housing providers, or another group of low-income energy users? So again, we ask you to select just one to indicate which group you're most interested in learning how to reach. And we'll give everyone just a few more seconds to put in their answers. Okay, just give everyone a couple more seconds. And I'm going to go ahead and share the results. So it looks like most people, 41%, are interested in reaching multifamily affordable housing tenants, 35% are interested in single-family homeowners, 14% in single-family home renters, and then 10% total between nonprofit housing providers and other. Back to you, Victoria.
Thanks, Wendy. Then thanks, everyone, for your participation. We're going to do one more of those after our last presentation.